Hi, everybody, and welcome to Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. We continue our look back at the year that was in 2021 in the world of pro wrestling, of course, with June 2021. I almost forgot real quick. June 2021. It helped me do that this week. I keep saying this month. I'm recording these all in a short period of time. Helping me do that, Jason Powell of ProWrestling.net. He was a past guest on the show in 2020, actually about a year and a half ago. And so, yeah, he and I went through all the stuff that happened in June throughout the major organizations. A couple highlights, depending on where you sit. WWE began making their cuts, a couple rounds of cuts with Braun Strowman, Aleister Black, Murphy, Ruby Riott, Lana, and a bunch of NXT and 205 talent getting cut as well. So we chatted about that. Let's see, what else happened this month? As I'm kind of reading through here, a bunch of NXT stuff as well. Vince McMahon headed down to the Performance Center to start doing some evaluations for talent. We talked about this this funny quote from Triple H from a call prior to TakeOver. Had some people making some debuts. Samoa Joe was re-signed, so there was some interesting stuff there. On the AEW side of things, Tony Khan was responding to some critiques about video gaming guest investments and so on. Andrade made his debut. And then all kinds of other stuff as well, including a Tony Khan getting a Impact main event move to Jacksonville, Florida, instead of in the Impact Zone. So we'll talk all about that and more. It's a fun addition to the show. Jason and I go for about an hour. And then actually we start talking about kind of like some things to look at that we're thinking about in the year ahead. So 2022, especially whether all these organizations are going to survive or not. So get that at the very end of the episode. So without further ado, let's hit it. You, me, Jason Powell, ProWrestling.net, talking about June 2021 in pro wrestling. Enjoy. Well, I'm glad to welcome back a past guest to this very show. Haven't talked with him since, I believe, 2020, summer 2020. So I'm glad to have him back. He is the voice, the man behind ProWrestling.net, as you know, Jason Powell, the one and only. He's been a longtime wrestling journo, a writer, a podcaster, everything you want to hear, and he's back today. Jason, we almost survived this whole year of pro wrestling. As we were talking about, there's a lot of pro wrestling on TV, almost too much, I'd say. But how have you been surviving this year?
Well, I mean, it's nice to be able to leave the house again. We'll see, you know, for how much longer with the virus spreading. But yeah, last time we talked, I think we were kind of still a little leery, but thinking things were getting better at least. And, 2021's been a lot better than 2020. So can't complain too much, but it's great to be back with you, Josh.
Yeah, summer 2020. Yeah, it was still kind of, still early in the COVID days. And we're just like, we'll be get through the summer, we'll be okay. Boy, how naive were we?
Oh, man. Is it ever going to end?
Probably not. Probably not. But anyway, so we're here to talk about the month that was June 2021 in pro wrestling. And again, these shows, I have to do one per month because there's so much stuff that happened. And if you've been listening to the rest of the series, first, thanks for doing that. And then I would say, so how this works is kind of split this up into different organizations. Kind of go through some of the big hits of the month. And again, we'll never hit every single thing that happened. I guarantee there was interesting things that happened on a Raw or a Dynamite that might not get in here. But for the majority of the things, they're on here. And for this month, Jason, we'll start with WWE. And I had kind of my top story of the month with them in going through everything was we had double cuts this month. And this was a big story throughout the whole year for WWE was the cuts in the front office. But, you know, the stuff that fans care about, obviously, were the cuts from talent, both in WWE and then also NXT as well. So there were two rounds of cuts this month. The first was early in the month with Braun Strowman, Aleister Black, Lana, Murphy, Ruby Riott, and Santana Garrett being cut. The second round was Fandango, Tyler Breeze, Tony Nese, Ari Daivari, August Gray, Ever-Rise, Kurt Stallion, The Bollywood Boys, Arturo Huas, Maria Shafir, Killian Dane, and Tino Sabatelli. Now, some of these people we've seen get jobs elsewhere. Some are still trying to get work or trying to kind of figure out where they are. Some may never get back in. So, you know, the cuts, we get to a year-end show, cuts are never surprising because they happen, you know, throughout every organization. I think we're going to see probably more next year, including AEW. But this was they had made cuts early in the year, but this was interesting for a lot of reasons. One, I think from that first round, guys like Braun Strowman and, you know, Aleister Black, I think myself personally, I was really surprised they cut Strowman. And this was kind of just the tip of the roster change iceberg for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I was really surprised they cut Strowman. And I think right behind that would have been the surprise of Aleister Black, because they had just started running those vignettes. And then he took out Big E. It's like, okay, you know, he's going to be doing some things here with Big E on SmackDown. That should be fun. And then they cut him without any resolution, without Big E getting even any revenge. It was just bizarre. And it was the Strowman cut that made me think, like, wow, we must be close to a sale. It's not like Vince McMahon to cut somebody like him. And we're still waiting for the sale.
Yeah, no kidding. It's with Strowman, I think just because we've been so preconditioned to, and rightfully so, that Vince McMahon loves big guys, tough guys, guys that he may not be able to take. And Strowman just really, you know, he evolved from the character with the Wyatt family, and kind of just, you know, he was a guy that they seemed to like because fans bought into him, especially when either him being a heel or a face. Obviously, you know, he beat Goldberg for the Universal title the year prior at WrestleMania, being a fill-in for Roman Reigns, and clearly, you know, they liked him. It still is strange because this seems to be a type of guy that is a perfect, you know, someone that you could see of WWE, I don't know, for life, but like a really long time. And it's surprising. I mean, he was, you know, I don't think anyone's ever going to say he had a five-star match or anything like that. But in terms of someone that, you know, fans could get into, especially maybe general wrestling fans, he seemed to check all the boxes. And I, as is the case with some of these guys, that you feel like, okay, they're one big push away. One, the company really saying, this is the guy, one big push away. And they felt like him for a long time from him being a made man. And they just, they came close, but they never really, you know, got over the hump with him.
I am so bad with, I just have a terrible memory. So I'm not going to remember the pay-per-view, but I believe it was the first time that he worked Brock Lesnar. And that's when people were really buzzing about Strowman. It was a first pay-per-view match. And the thought was, man, if they just put it on him, they've got something here and ride that momentum. And they didn't, because everything was being saved for Roman Reigns. And that was kind of the beginning of the downfall. It wasn't, you know, immediate or anything, but it just felt like a real missed opportunity for them. I think people forget just how over he was at that point. And then slowly but surely, they just started to put him in weird situations, and the act got stale. But I guess I'll always wonder what might have been had they just pulled the trigger that night.
Right. A lot of people said that with Aleister Black as well. You mentioned him, and, you know, he was kind of tabbed as a Heyman guy, quote unquote, and, you know, got kind of some stops and starts, but, you know, he was hurt. The weird thing, he had just come back like the week before on SmackDown against Big E. I think you had mentioned that. And it was yeah, he had just returned, and then all of a sudden, he's done. And this is after Selena Vega was essentially re-signed with the company. This was just a really strange situation, and we'll get to it in a second. Actually, might as well get to it now. So when AEW was showing interest, there was talk that WWE was going to potentially try to get Black back and offer him a new contract. It just seemed that there was some miscommunication, misunderstanding, or they didn't really know what to do with Black, or there's some people that wanted him, some people that didn't. Just a bizarre situation.
The thing I heard on that, and, you know, I can't swear to it, but it's just a more gossip type thing, is that Paul Levesque wanted to give Aleister Black a deal similar to Samoa Joe. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it was discussed, and then just that was it. There was no follow-up there. And, you know, I don't know if was the beginning of the end for Hunter's power, you know, in NXT, I'm not quite sure. But yeah, that didn't come to fruition. I felt so bad for Aleister Black, now Malakai Black, and Zelina Vega. You know, she gets let go by the company after the dispute over third party type of things. And then she comes back just in time for him to be let go. I always, you know, I have no idea. She's been speaking positively about, you know, the situation with at MSG on 9/11, she seems like she's in a pretty good place. And so maybe it wouldn't have mattered. Maybe they did. But I always felt like, given the way everything played out, they should have gone to her. And again, maybe they did, and offered her, like, hey, we're letting your husband go. Given everything, the way everything's played out, if you would like your release, we will grant it to you. I mean, it just seemed like the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. But again, maybe they did. I'm kind of doubting it, but it just seemed, and give her the option. Obviously, if you want to stay, we're going to continue to move forward with you. But if you'd rather be with your husband, we totally get it.
And yes, a few of these people have made their way to AEW. Obviously, Aleister Black, Ruby Riott, Santana Garrett, kind of not necessarily contract, but has made some dark appearances, and also Rampage as well. Let's see, who else is Tony Nese, obviously. August Gray, who is Anthony Green, got a couple of matches on Dark. Ever-Eyes, a.k.a. 2.0, and Huas and Shafir as well, getting some appearances on Dark. And, you know, for the rest of the group, really haven't heard a lot of them yet. Lana, we're just kind of, you know, the thought is maybe she's going to show up with Miro at some point. Murphy is kind of finally starting to get back out there. Some New Japan dates. So yeah, we'll have to see kind of for the rest of this group.
Well, remember, let me jump in really quick. Aria did have that match on Rampage. And I was actually at that show here in the Twin Cities. And then I believe Tino Sabatelli also worked Dark or Elevation. And then Marina Shafir recently, just this week, popped up on the show too. The one that really surprised me, Josh, that we didn't see in Bland and AEW is Murphy. I just figured that, you know, that the good in-ring work, that he'd be a shoe-in there, and it didn't happen. And I'm even more surprised that rather, you know, the name was always so bad, Buddy Murphy, and he goes with Buddy Matthews. Like, really, dude? Come on. Anything other than Buddy, please?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's like when every really great worker or potentially great worker gets cut, we think that maybe, you know, AEW is going to be a landing spot. I think their roster crunch is a real thing. You know, especially I think if you ask Tony Khan, gave him a little bit of truth serum, I think that he would probably say if he knew that all these people are going to be made available this year, maybe some signings that he did, he may have not done, or may have rearranged things a little bit to kind of better fit. It's kind of like having a fantasy team and then all of a sudden, like, all these stars hit waivers and no one else is potentially really bidding on them. Or if they do, they don't have enough like fab money for those people, you know, like fantasy sports. It's interesting. And some of these people could appear elsewhere. You know, Impact hasn't necessarily, you know, swooped in and got a lot of these talents. A few of them, I think they definitely could have used. Ring of Honor, obviously, that situation has been talked about a lot, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this group lands, you know, where we are a year from now with this group. And again, some people may be just out of the business completely. Some just may work the indies, and, you know, I guess we'll have to see. Let's go to this next chunk here. I'll kind of read through these headlines and get your thoughts after I read this first group here. So we had some new senior leadership hires as Nick Khan's reign and his, I would say his tentacles, but kind of just he's the reimagining of the organization in his image and philosophy takes over from the inside. Again, with a lot of the mass layoffs we had seen and talked about in June, we learned that Daniel Bryan, at this point still a free agent, was not part of any talks with New Japan. If you guys remember last episode, there was the story that came out that WWE and New Japan were in some talks. There were some rumblings of the WWE draft coming up in August. Grayson Waller, Ike Manjiro, and Trey Baxter made their debuts in either 205 Live or NXT. There was some hope that The Rock would be at the Survivor Series, given his anniversary, 25th anniversary. WWE was holding some, was learned they were going to be holding some open tryouts in Las Vegas. Again, kind of the irony there with all the cuts they made. They're going to have open tryouts. Piper Niven made her debut with Ava Marie as Doudrop. And we'll move on from there with that name, yeah. We learned that the best WWE moment was going to be returning to the ESPYs. Hell in the Cell results, Bobby Lashley retaining over Drew McIntyre, the WWE champion, and then WWE champion Bobby Lashley, that is. And at that point, because of the win, Drew could no longer challenge for that title as long as Lashley was champion. Bianca Belair also retained her title over Bayley in a Hell in a Cell match. Learned afterwards that Kevin Owens was going to be taking some time off after Hell in a Cell. We had the first ever Hell in a Cell, or the first Hell in a Cell match on Raw since 1998, when Bobby Lashley took on Xavier Woods. I believe this is the week after, or the Monday after. Money in the Bank began to take shape for June. We learned that Bobby Lashley would take on Kofi Kingston and Roman Reigns would defend his title against the returning Edge. John Cena on the Jimmy Fallon show said he was quote-unquote definitely returning at some point to WWE. Writer Kenise Mobley was released after a podcast appearance where, kind of paraphrase this a bit, but essentially she didn't know like a lot of who the wrestlers were, and there was just kind of a little online dust-up about kind of like, you know, how is she writing for people she doesn't know or understand and what have you, and she ended up being released shortly thereafter. Booker T lost a Call of Duty likeness lawsuit. I don't remember anything about this at all, but this is a story. Karrion Kross and Bronson Reed got WWE Dark matches that were later learned they were going to be taped for main event instead. And then Kross, Scarlett, and Shotzi Blackheart later had Dark matches on a SmackDown taping. Thoughts on any of that?
Well, I mean, boy, there's a lot to take in there. I mean, I don't remember the name. There was a controversial hire with the executives, somebody from, I believe, Fox that had some sexual harassment allegations.
Jamie Horowitz, is that right?
Yes. Yep. That was, and it's been, I mean, there was the initial kind of like, wow, that's happening. And it's been very quiet since then. It didn't really get the big backlash from the entertainment industry that I thought it might. Wrestling fans were all over it. But in the entertainment industry, it was just kind of like, well, he got hired and they moved on. The money or the Hell in a Cell thing, I think, weren't they still running the performance center at the time or one of the bigger venues where it's just they were in the same location for they're having residencies. And so it was like, well, we've got the damn thing set up. Let's just do it again on Monday. So what that came off like. Kenise Mobley. Yeah, I don't remember what she called Bobby Lashley, but she didn't know Bobby Lashley's name. And that's what really got people fired up. And on that one, look, they hired her, you know, and they would know what her wrestling knowledge would be. And she's far from the first person they've hired with limited wrestling knowledge. If I always looked at this as, okay, are they embarrassed that it got out that she knows so little about this? Or was it she was told not to do any type of media? Because Lord knows the writers aren't supposed to say boo. And if they told her, don't go out there and do any type of media, okay, justifiable. If they didn't, I don't think she should have been let go. I mean, you hired her knowing what her knowledge is. So, and if you didn't tell her, don't go public with it, then what did she do wrong?
Yeah, at the time. So she had talked about her hiring. And she said it was a surprise for her. They did not require me to know anything about wrestling, but I do have a background in film production and comedy writing. And they're like, perfect, come on in. So on the podcast, so I'm on the Monday Night Raw team, blah, blah, blah. People I know on it are Bobby. His name is either Bobby Ashley or Bobby Lashley. And I really should know that. He's like this giant black guy. And he and the people who are part of his crew, I know they call, or at least the last year, call themselves Hurt Business. They wear suits and they're like, we're cool. And yeah, David, the point had at the time said it turned out a fairly big thing. Mobley's under the gun for speaking publicly on subjects WWE doesn't want stuff talked about, and so on and so forth. Yeah, it's but you're right. Yeah, I mean, they hired her. I mean, she said they hired her and she had no knowledge of wrestling, and they said great, and then they released her because she admitted she didn't know anything about wrestling publicly. So I guess that seemed to be her crime for some point.
Yeah, which is bizarre. I mean, and believe me, I do think that the vast majority of the writers should have product knowledge. Don't get me wrong. But once they made that decision, it just seems weird that they followed through like they did. And then the dark matches, it was like, okay, looks like Kross and Reed and Scarlett and Shotzi are all moving up. And eventually they move Kross up there, and that was a huge letdown. Scarlett never joined him. And then Shotzi was the only one who moved up. Bronson Reed were all like pegging for the main roster, and instead he gets released.
Yeah. Going to the second chunk here. But Becky Lynch was spotted working out at the Performance Center. So obviously her return was going to be impending. Lex Luger, remember that documentary? It was said to be debuting on the 4th of July. And we're still waiting for that doc to debut, which it will never debut, I think, at this point. You just mentioned the Thunderdome. The residency was coming to an end finally on July 9th as WWE was preparing to go back out on the road for TV. Vince McMahon was visiting the Performance Center to scout talent. This became a big story.
Oh, and everything went well. Just duckies and bunnies. Oh, everyone was so happy with the way it went. They were so nervous going in, but he was so nice.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's always never been involved in anything. He's just the nicest guy in the world. And it's everyone else, right? It's everyone else that's at fault. Sanjay Dutt was gone from the company. I believe it was his own request to be released as a producer. And then Seemed Canyon was still with the company. I put this in here because this became a story that he was let go, then he wasn't let go, and then eventually, I believe in July, was that, spoiler, it's everyone, he's going to be let go. He was
now, Josh, it's Canyon Seaman. Come on now.
Oh, Canyon.
It's weird enough that you have the last name Seaman, but no one would name their child Seaman for a first name, would they?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Canyon Seaman. You're correct. Ronda Rousey and Travis Brown announced they were expecting a girl. Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch were finally going to get married during the month of June. SummerSlam was confirmed from Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. It was learned via Renee Paquette on her podcast that Triple H offered to help Jon Moxley after a 2019 injury, even though at the time he was with AEW, and then WWE continued to kind of nod or move slowly towards normalcy, announcing a 4-show UK September tour. Thoughts on any of that? Any of that stand out?
Now, the September tour did not happen, correct?
I think it did. Yeah, actually, I think it did. Yeah, it was just
really?
Yeah, it was just kind of like a, I think it was just all England dates, if I remember right, but it was just kind of a just small, like, yeah, like no frills type thing. Yeah.
I'm actually surprised. My timeline, like I said, my mental timeline is so terrible. I just figured they would have still been kind of in lockdown, not lockdown mode, but just not going overseas mode, at least. Yeah, I mean, the Vince thing was just, it was comical. Everybody, I totally understand the stress of why is Vince McMahon coming here along with this, you know, his cronies. And then all of a sudden, coming out of it, like, it went so well. And it's like, did you really think Vince McMahon himself was going to show up and fire everyone? And obviously, we hoped that he wasn't going to fire anyone. But it was, you know, of course it's going to go smoothly with Vince. He's not going to do the dirty work. Others are going to. And so I hope people kind of learn from that and remember that if Vince shows up again and it goes well, it doesn't mean anything.
Let's go to WWE NXT. Again, speak of places that Vince was visiting. Obviously, at the...
This is back when it was good.
I know, right? Back at the Capitol Wrestling Center. You could see the storm clouds on the horizon, right? With some of the cuts and Vince and all those things. So they had a takeover. Remember those? This was takeover in your house. The results there, Karrion Kross retaining his NXT title in a 5-way main event. Raquel Gonzalez retained her NXT women's title. Bronson Reed and MSK retained in a winner-take-all match. It was a 6-man match. And then LA Knight won the revived million-dollar title in a ladder match over Cameron Grimes. Carmelo Hayes, a.k.a. Christian Casanova on the Indies, made his NXT debut in answering Kushida's Cruiserweight title open challenge. NXT, it was discussed that they were going to resume touring in July. We're still waiting for that. Maiko Satomura won the NXT UK women's title from Kaylee Ray. This Kaylee Ray was the one of the longest reigning champions in the company. I know not a lot of people watch NXT UK, but this was kind of a big deal at the time, in a sense. Great American Bash was announced it was returning, and it was talking about another takeover coming in August. Just, you mentioned him earlier, Samoa Joe returned back to NXT, signed to an NXT deal as a enforcer for William Regal. So any dreams of him going to AEW or elsewhere were cut down pretty quick. There was entrance times during NXT shows that were cut down, and they showed some interest in former MLW manager Selena De La Renta. The Diamond Mine debuted, and no, Tessa Blanchard was not involved. This is a faction with Roderick Strong and Stokely Hathaway and some of that group. Tony Storm came out as bisexual. Jamie Hayter and Sky Smithson were announced they were getting NXT UK tryouts, and it was assumed they were going to sign, obviously, for Hayter. We knew that was not going to be the case. The NXT Breakout Tournament was returning, and Isaiah Swerve Scott won the North American title over the aforementioned Bronson Reed, as we thought at the time that was going to be a precursor for Reed getting called up. And lo and behold, that would not be the case. Thoughts on any of that NXT news?
It just, it feels like it was so long ago now that given all the changes that have taken place since then, it's just kind of sad to think back to. Not that it was, I didn't think 2020 was a great year for NXT by any means. It was not the peak, but I didn't think it was as bad as I think people are making it out to be now, that it was just, you know, so terrible and they needed to change. And it definitely was, and I remember asking on one of the media calls how Hunter and Sean felt about it, and they were surprisingly fairly honest and just saying, you know, there's ebbs and flows. And I don't remember the timeline of that media call, but it wasn't like, you know, they weren't going, this is the greatest ever and you're nuts. You know, they seemed to be a little honest about the assessment of things and in their assessment of things. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's, I guess, just kind of sad to think back on what it was. And I'm even somebody that, okay, decision's been made. I can enjoy the current, you know, 2.0 for what it is. And at the same time, I mean, I miss the original NXT. I really thought it was something special. I thought that Vince was handed a blueprint by Paul Levesque as to this is the way of the future. And I think we're seeing that play out in AEW rather than in WWE.
Good point. Good point. And I want to read you this quote because you mentioned the media calls, and you and I have been basically on all these media calls for the last few years. And this is a quote I completely forgot about, but I wanted to read because I knew you're going to be on here. It's so funny to me sometimes how in our business, everyone is so worried about where someone is going to go or land or how this is going to play out long term in the future. How about watch it? Do you like it or do you not like it? Do you have to say, I like it, but I like this other thing more? Just watch it or don't. And stop trying to figure out where everything goes. Fans ruin their own stuff half the time trying to figure out where everything goes and why it's going there and how. And then trying to pick up their phone and search for the thing to find out what it is can ruin it for them so they aren't surprised when it happens. I don't understand that. And that would be Paul Levesque on one of the media calls. This was the one in June. I remember him saying that quote. I loved when he actually like showed emotion on the calls and wasn't just, you know, asked about when NXT was going to be coming to like Dublin or how great that the women's wrestlers are, which seems to be, you know, he actually showed some emotion. And I think you could see, again, you know, hindsight's 2020, but you could kind of see some cracks in the foundation, so to speak. And again, as we kind of go through this month and Vince coming in and where things kind of ended up, you could see the cracks in the foundation. And at this point, again, Levesque is recovering from a heart attack or whatever it is that they're calling it. But, you know, we haven't seen him. Got some quotes from him here or there, but it's, at the beginning of the year, I did not expect Paul Levesque to be out of NXT and us be reading quotes like this and feeling like it was like the Stone Age. You know what I mean?
Right. Now, a cardiac event. And cardiac I don't event. Know if that is that a, is that like a Vince Lingo thing? Like it's in the list of things you can't say heart attack.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. It must've, I get to a heart attack to Vince probably denotes some sort of weakness or something like that. Cause you know, hearts just don't give out, right? That just doesn't happen, pal.
Right. The quote, yeah, that one caught me off guard. I didn't expect that from Levesque. He was very good. I mean, I miss the media calls. I do. And I think that NXT would be wise to put Sean out there. Yeah, you're going to get some early negativity from somebody, but get it out of the way. He did an interview recently with Scott Fishman and just kind of speaking highly of what they're doing now. And I read that thinking, man, they need somebody to be delivering this message. And nothing, you know, nothing against Scott. There's only going to be so many people who are going to read any particular website. They need Shawn Michaels to get out there in front of people, wrestling media, and not just because it's us, but because we obviously pass it along to our listeners and readers and make people feel good about this product. Let people know that he's excited about it. And I think that's missing. But yeah, that Triple H quote was so bizarre. Like, don't you remember being a fan? Is this how you watch, Paul? You just accepted whatever you were given? You didn't? I mean, come on. Yeah. We all know this guy was way more passionate than that. And so I just think it was the wrong question at the wrong time that triggered him, maybe. I don't know. I wasn't used to seeing him get triggered like this unless it was something a little more controversial.
Yeah, and remember, this was the same call. He was asked about the NWA All Women's Empower Show. And I don't know if he was asked if they were going to send talent or something like that. And he made the point that, look, we did that. It was, you know, a couple of years prior with Evolution. And he said, you know, if I did that now, you know, if I did an all men show, they would say, where's all the women? So he's like, we already did that. And you could hear his frustration more than ever on this call. Again, I welcome the human emotion out of it because you can kind of see what's going on there. To an extent, but yeah, this was, I do miss those calls a lot, Jason. I miss your questions a lot on those calls, especially.
Yeah, it was, you know, a lot of times I just remember people, some in the wrestling media who weren't invited were crapping all over these things when they started about how they wouldn't take part. And then magically they did take part once they were invited. But my thing was, well, their big complaint was that he's not telling you anything. And it's like, okay, but if Bill Belichick, the Patriots head coach, is famous for saying next to nothing in his media, his press conferences, it doesn't mean the reporter for the Boston Herald or Boston Globe, whatever it is, or both, don't go. Of course you go, and of course you ask the question. And so even if you get three calls in a row where you don't get much of anything, there's a lot of talk but not a lot of substance, hey, that fourth call, you might get something gold. And I felt like we did at times get just whether it was – I can't even really give you examples, but I just felt like there were times where it was insightful and it was totally worth it. And I definitely miss those.
Let's flip to AEW. And as we talked about in the past, you know, in the months that they don't have a pay-per-view, you know, their news is kind of light, more kind of just, I don't want to say transactional, but just kind of, yeah, just kind of a slow, steady drumbeat when it comes to AEW. Awesome. And this was this is the era that there was just the era, right? I guess 8 years ago. Feels like 8 years ago. There was no Rampage at this point, obviously. It's just Dynamite every week. So Awesome Kong and Shanna's contracts were not renewed. Double or Nothing was angling to be the second best pay-per-view ever for buys at the time for AEW. Andrade El Idolo debuted on Dynamite, the post-Double or Nothing edition, with Vicky Guerrero, of all people. And I remember the entrance, the introduction, she was screaming to the point you couldn't understand what she was saying when she said his name. So it's like, who is it? And then it's like, oh, okay, that's Andrade. And it just was, the pairing didn't work. And you know, shortly thereafter, they were able to kind of go their own ways. I think, you know, to Tony Khan's credit, I think they knew like this was just not the right mix. For any reason. Luckily they moved away from that. But I just remember that intro kind of being like, oh, okay.
We need to put him with a jacked mute.
Yeah. First Chavo and then a jacked mute. You're right. But a kind one, because he helped Arn Anderson up after he fell off the stage and then beat him up. You remember that?
Yeah. I mean, hey, if you're going to beat somebody up, the least you can do is help them up first.
That's right. Old West style. Andrade Black. Aleister Black was believed to be AEW bound, but again, we just talked about WWE was possibly going to offer them a new deal. More births. Renee Paquette and John Moxley had a baby girl, as well as Cody and Brandy having their own baby girl. Cody Rhodes launched a podcast called, I think it was Anything But Wrestling. I have heard nothing about this. It could not exist at this point. I have no idea. Wow. There was a AEW announced that it was their investment in video games and how much they put in. I think, if I remember right, it was around like $10 million or something like that. And there was criticism of it from, I think, from video game people or you know fans that had played video games or what have you. And something along those lines. Essentially, they're running in the red for the video game thing, but it was more of a long-term play because Khan had invested in, I believe, the company itself.
And how dare he spend his money the way he chooses?
I know. But he responded to the criticisms, which he admits is he's very plugged into what people say on social media, for better or worse. And he, you know, if he hears falsehoods or hears something that's not right, he will definitely address those for the most part. We'll see how long that goes. September Stadium show for Arthur Ashe Stadium was announced for September. This is obviously a big thing. AEW's first official stadium show. We had no idea what the capacity is going to be. We just knew it was going to be a lot. But obviously, Queens, New York in Arthur Ashe Stadium, first time ever. AEW venturing into WWE territory, if you kind of buy into that type of stuff. This is a big deal at the time and end up obviously being a big deal, which we'll talk about in a couple of months when we get to September. We learned more details about Rampage. It was going to be debuting in August, Dark Elevation, and how that was going to be taped, as well as Dark, and Tony Khan saying he was looking at securing a new venue for Dark so we could film that. And we learned that would later be Universal Studios in Florida at the former home of Impact Wrestling and TNA's soundstage. MJF launched his cryptocurrency. This got to be a big thing. I remember this because Brian Alvarez talked about it on his show and actually bought some. And it really went up and up and up. And then really quietly, no one talked about it. And the thing just absolutely crashed. There you go with cryptocurrency with MJF. Yuka Sakazaki announced she was returning for a short AEW run. She was coming over from Japan. Trent underwent successful neck fusion surgery. The again, AEW at the time is starting to plan to go back out on the road in July. So their cards for Road Rager and Fighter Fest, their shows were coming together, like Andrade's debut and so on and so forth. Sanjay Dutt, as quickly as he was gone from WWE, was in AEW, signed up as a producer, and then Rebel dislocated her kneecap during a match. And this was knowable because she was doing a spot and then essentially couldn't move and had to crawl over the ring to tag in Britt Baker and just kind of laid on the apron. We thought maybe a torn ACL, but she was kind of back at it. Obviously, she's a part-time wrestler, if that. But yeah, that was something that happened during the month as well. Thoughts on any of the AEW happenings in June?
So I have absolutely no recollection of Cody Rhodes launching a podcast. That
I don't think he has either.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the first I've heard of it, I think. I mean, again, terrible memories. I probably did, but man, that went nowhere, apparently. And then the, well, Rampage and Dark Elevation and Dark and all that. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, you're making good money from Rampage. If the network wants it, you give it within reason. And the thing that I appreciated about this is it came out that the network wanted 3 hours of Dynamite, and Tony Khan actually paid attention to history and said, no, that's not a good idea. Let's have a separate one-hour show. Unfortunately, I don't understand the idea. We have AEW Dark. Now we're going to go with AEW Dark Elevation. I have no idea what the difference is. One of them is filmed at Universal. The other is now filmed at the wherever Dynamite or Rampage are being held. That, I mean, I get that part of it, but I don't get naming them so using such similar names. And I really don't get the need for two online shows. There's already too much wrestling. Yes, you're super serving a certain fan that wants this. When they first put Rampage out, or I'm saying when they first put Dark out, I was into it. I was like, okay, because at that point you just had Dynamite. It was like a YouTube show that makes sense, and it's going to air on Mondays, and it's going to start in the hour leading up to Raw. I'm like, I can watch that. You know, that's something leading into Raw. I'm fine with that. And then the damn show wouldn't end. I'm like, what is this? Why is this not a one-hour show? And for the life of me, I still don't really get what purpose these shows serve, other than getting some reps for the wrestlers. But if you watch the show, the matches in many cases are so brief. Are they really getting much out of this? I just wish there was more of a defined purpose for these shows other than, well, we're getting a lot of people work, but they're two, three-minute matches. It's something, but it's not what it could be. And I still think if you just showed some discipline, and they have lately with Dark, but make it clear, like, yeah, this is a one-hour show. And I think they would actually get more people watching it. But there's just, it feels like a bunch of matches just thrown together. And, 40-some matches, I think, they taped at Universal. And I don't, other than racking up content for a potential streaming deal, what else is there? I mean, rumor has it, it's like $100,000 to rent Universal for a day. So what return are they getting on this investment of time? I just think the whole having two of these shows is a complete waste and overkill.
Yeah, it seems to be really just kind of a holding, I wouldn't say holding cell, but some of these talents that they can't get on the 3 hours of national TV, they need to have them do something because they don't want to just release them. And I think it's kind of like almost like he's treating it as a minor leagues almost. He has control over these talents. If he needs to call someone up, so to speak, for angles, he can do that. I think the roster crunch is going to be a bigger story in 2022 because there's so many talents that I think he wants to bring in. But for every new talent, every new talent that either emerges from the indies or like Hook, for example, kind of a homegrown talent, there is another guy there or another girl there that has been signed for a while that is going to get pushed to the background. And I think you're going to start to see, with some of these deals that are coming up, a lot of deals not being renewed. I think it has to, because you can't keep all these people under contract and keep everyone happy. I think people have been kind of fat and happy there for a while, but I think there's going to be kind of this like lower tier that is like, what are we doing here? They're happy to accept the check, but I think those checks are going to end, and I think you're going to start to hear some more stories of frustration and not being used in 2022. That's one of my predictions anyway.
Yeah, I think when it comes to that, the honeymoon phase, it has to end, right? I mean, you just,
yeah.
I think you touched on it earlier. They never could have imagined WWE was going to cut so many people and they would have access to so many stars. I think they probably assumed the opposite based on the way WWE reacted to the rumors of AEW before it was even AEW. Let's lock everybody in. Let's give out these big contracts. And so who would have guessed they were going to go the complete opposite route with it? And you know, with Tony going public here lately, talking about his contracts are real, you know, WWE's with the whole, with the out clauses and everything, I'm with you. I don't think we're going to see like a massive wave of cuts mid-contract or anything like that, because he's established that, you know, he sees his contracts as being essentially guaranteed. You know, if you sign a 2-year deal, unless you screw up or something, you're going to be there for 2 years. But once the deal ends, yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of people let go, and it's going to be unfortunate, but that is business.
It is. And going back to the Cody podcast, so he has done 4 podcasts since this launched in June 24th. He did one in June, one July, 2 July, and one just 2 weeks ago. So not exactly keeping a regular schedule there, you know?
Yeah, I seriously had no idea.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, get it wherever your podcasts wherever you listen to your podcast, as they say. We'll let's go. We'll combine Impact and ROH because not a lot going on there in terms of news. Impact, Steve Macklin, the former Steve Cutler in WB, signed a deal. And I think that was a good spot for him to go. Tony Khan, speaking of him, appeared on Impact TV to negotiate a change in the Against All Odds main event. And that meant that the world title match between, at that point, actually triple champion, Kenny Omega and Moose would be moved to Jacksonville. And I think they did this so there would be no interference or anything along those lines. I think it was probably like Kenny Omega does not want to go to Nashville to film this thing, so we'll just have it, you come to us versus we come to you type of situation. The Young Bucks actually appeared at the end Against Outlaws to help Omega win that match. And then all champs retained at Against All Odds. It was Young Bucks' first appearance in Impact since the Generation Me days. So it had been a long, long time. And they would not appear after that. A limited amount of fans, it was announced, were going to appear at Slammiversary as Impact kind of slowly gets back to normal. Sally Callahan earning a title shot against Kenny Omega. And that was based out of that change in the Against All Odds main event, because Callahan, if I remember right, had pinned Moose in a tag team match and therefore had a claim to a title shot, he thought. And they said, no, we're just going to do this instead. And Callahan and Havoc announced that they were getting married. And then unfortunate news, Don West diagnosed with brain lymphoma. Obviously, a lot of people remember how good Don West was with Mike Tenay back in the TNA days. One of the kind of the few bright spots for a lot of people in that time, and how quickly he took to the business and everything. And for those that had not heard him, they got a chance to maybe hear some YouTube clips or things like that. But he was really, really good, really entertaining. We flip to ROH. Rush versus Bandido, Gresham versus Bennett, Dragon Lee versus Deppen, Brody King versus Jay Lethal, and more were being set up for July's Best in the World pay-per-view. Tracy Williams was recovering after being hit by a car, and Glory by Honor was announced as returning to Philadelphia for 2 nights in front of fans in August. Thoughts on any of Impact and ROH's June?
Do we know where Rikishi was when Tracy Williams was hit by the car?
I don't think we do. I don't think we do, unfortunately.
Yeah. Fortunately, we can joke because he's recovered. He's been back in the ring and looks good. But Steve Macklin, the signing with Impact, when it happened, was like, all right, didn't think much of it. I've been very impressed. You know, I don't know that he's ever going to be a world champion or anything like that, but I've been very impressed by just the way he came in as, you know, one of the sidekicks of Jackson Ryker, essentially a forgotten son. And they got a raw deal with, you know, they were so close to having this run with New Day. And then Ryker said what Ryker said on Twitter, and they got the heat for it too. You know, just as far as not heat, but just kind of the whole thing was pulled. And they get let go. He shows up in Impact, and he looks like a new man. You know, he came in and reinvented himself. I'm all for that. You know, there's some people, when they leave a company, it makes complete sense to, you know, stick with what's working. But if you're a guy in his position and what you were doing really wasn't, why wouldn't you reinvent yourself? We need to see more of that. And I've just been really impressed by what he's done so far in Impact Wrestling. And then I did get a big kick out of heel Tony on Impact Wrestling. It was at first like, what is this? And the more it went on, the more fun it was. And I still love that Jaguars pimp jacket that he continues to wear occasionally. As soon as I saw that, I just popped. And I don't know if that's like he thinks it's a great jacket or he has the same sense of humor. And it's like, this is one hell of a pimp jacket. Either way, it worked for me.
Yeah. And I talked to Steve Macklin on this very podcast before Bound for Glory. And yeah, I would agree. One of the things I want to talk about is kind of, you know, that reinvention of character and how much I learned, you know, he takes in from pop culture and kind of like in comic book movies and just kind of like just he takes all these aspects in. He's always kind of thinking like, how can I implement this? How can I tweak this? How can I do this? And with a lot of, you know, the talent that were cut, you know, he was cut obviously early in the year and not as part of like a mass layoff. He kind of benefited him, I think, because he got out there early, was able to think of some things. And then, you know, he had been in WWE in the system essentially his entire career outside like a very short run, the indies early. So for him to get out there, it was, kudos to him for figuring that out. And good for bringing that up. We flipped to Japan. And again, I admit I am not a big Japanese wrestling watcher, but these are a few of the major headlines of the month. Shingo Takagi defeating Okada to win the vacant IWGP title at Dominion. That was vacated due to Will Ospreay's neck injury that was revealed the month before. And Kota Ibushi on that show defeating Jeff Cobb. New Japan had to cancel a June Road to Dominion event, I think, due to the state of emergency. This poor company has just had an awful 2021 and 2020. Taichi and Zack Sabre Jr. Regained the tag team titles, defeating Tama Tonga and Tangaloa. At another Road to Dominion event, we learned that Chris Jericho was no longer in a New Japan contract. However, he was open to returning whatever they wanted. Marufuji defeated Kaiji Muto for the GHC title. Fred Rosser signed an exclusive deal with New Japan and appearing on Strong. Josh Alexander, X Division champion for Impact, made his debut on that show as well. Wrestle Grand Slam was announced it was going to be moving to July and that Takagi was going to be defending against Ibushi on that show. And two more Grand Slam shows were announced for September. The Good Brothers were announced that they were going to be on New Japan Strong in their first appearance in a New Japan ring since 2016. Strong was going to tape in front of fans for the first time. New Japan announced a resurgence show for LA with Jon Moxley on the card as well. I believe that did not happen due to Dynamite being moved to Saturday night. Suwama vacated the All Japan Triple Crown due to COVID. And then Jake Lee won a three-way to determine the new champion. Ishimori and El Fantasmo regained the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team titles. And then G1 plans are being finalized for both September and October. And that was Japan.
Yeah, so I'm like you. I mean, I was into the New Japan product for a while. And then with just the abundance of wrestling in the U.S. that's on television combined with no desire to watch another product that didn't have fans in attendance, it was like, it just was painful to watch. And so I kind of fell out of it. I look forward to getting back into it. But I would say one thing that jumps out to me is the line about Fred Rosser signing an exclusive deal and Josh Alexander debuting. Both of those guys had really good years. You know, Rosser really has just come back strong. I think so many people had kind of forgotten about him from the Darren Young days, and it's been really cool to see him find his way. And then Josh Alexander loses his tag team partner and just has thrived as a singles act. You know, when Ethan Page went to AEW, I kind of assumed that, all right, Josh is probably going to follow whenever his deal is up. And maybe he still will. I don't even know what his contractual status is, but he really had a excellent year. They pushed him heavily in Impact Wrestling, and it really paid off. I thought they told some good stories with him, and he became a very likable babyface and had some just terrific matches.
Yeah, the only thing I didn't like, as we talked about with John Alba in the April edition, was how he won and then lost the title like a minute later, 5 minutes later on Bound for Glory. I thought they did such a good story kind of building up to that point, and just I thought the time was right, and I if they wanted to get the title on Moose, there was a different way to do it. I don't know. He's got a high profile match against Jonah next month. I don't know. We'll see if they can build him back up in a way that will get the same steam going. I just thought they had a lot of momentum because to your point, he had such a strong year, and just the kind of way they did that, I thought they outthought themselves a little bit on that one.
So I liked it in the moment because It was one of the, you know, the, I think like everybody, I like being surprised, and if it makes sense. And in this case, I didn't see that coming. I'm not even a mile away. And I went into it going, or after, you know, coming out of it, I should say, it was like, well, if they can, it's going to be one of those you have to kind of wait and see. My fear, because there was rumors that Braun Strowman was going to show up on that show, was that they're putting the title on Moose to set the table for Braun. And I don't think that is a wise move. But if this is more about, hey, let's really surprise people on our biggest show of the year and then set the table for Josh Alexander to come after Moose, I'm down with that. And the reason is, okay, if Alexander wins the title, which he did technically, but if he keeps the title and they're going to go to Alexander and Moose, eh. But if you do this and Alexander's in chase mode, he's going for revenge, what have you, I'm into it, but I haven't liked the follow-up. And so I kind of, in time, have gone back to where you are. Eh, they should have just left the title on him.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens in January. We'll go with the rest, of the best of the rest, the junk drawer, so to speak. NWA, When Our Shadows Fall, they had a pay-per-view. Nick Aldis retaining the world title in a disqualification over Trevor Murdoch, which a lot of fans that watched the show did not like. I say a lot in, you know, air quotes, really, because not a lot of fans, fortunately, watch NWA. Again, too much wrestling, not to follow the product. I think it just, it is what it is.
Behind a paywall now.
I know. Yeah. Camille won the women's world title from Serena Deeb. Kylie Rae signed with the NWA after a deal was worked out with Impact Wrestling to release her from her contract. NWA announced the all-women's pay-per-view, which we talked about earlier, Empower, headed up by Mickie James, and also an anniversary pay-per-view on the same weekend. MLW had some news as they are preparing to return for their next season. King Huerta is signing a multi-year deal. Lee Moriarty, Aramis, NJ, Induka, who is in NXT, and Ares were announced as signing deals. And then the Opera Cup and both Battle Riot were coming back in the months ahead. We learned that MLW was opting out of their deal with DAZN in the United States and were looking for a U.S. streaming deal. I think Court Bauer teased that this is going to happen at all points. We still have not seen anything yet. IWTV sued GCW for breach of contract for airing pay-per-views elsewhere. I don't believe this has been resolved yet. I think GCW asked to have it thrown out of court in November, I believe, but I don't think it's still been resolved yet. Matt Cardona attacked Nick Gage in a bit of a surprise at GCW Zombie Walk, and a match between the two was later announced for Homecoming. Leo Rush retired again. PWG announced they were going to be returning back to live action in August. Federacion Wrestling, which is a new Mexican promotion that's going to bring all these new stars or existing stars like Andrade and so on, announced they're postponing their debut show, which a lot of people expected even when it was first announced. Melissa Coates, who is a manager for Sabu, I believe. I didn't really know a lot about her, but there was a lot of people seem to know her in wrestling anyway, or at least a segment of the fan base did, passing away at just 50 years old. And then the Triple Mania card was finalized. Joining Andrade versus Omega would be a Rey Scorpion versus Psycho Clown and a Hair versus Mask match. Thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, so Coates was with him in more recent years, kind of playing, she dressed like the genie from the old I Dream of Genie show, and I think they called her Super Genie.
Yeah.
And, you know, she had a career before that, obviously. You know, Leo Rush retiring again, I think we all just kind of, well, if it's serious, he's an impressive athlete, wish him well, but I think in the back of my mind, or in the back of all of our minds, we're like, he'll be back. And, hats off to Cardona. Speaking of reinvention, the whole thing with GCW, man, I'm not a big deathmatch guy at all. It's, you know, to each their own on that. You like it, great. It's just never been for me, but I really did enjoy just seeing him go in there, leaning into the WWE, coming out to O-Radio and all of that, and just having this feud with Nick Gage. That was a blast, and I wish we got that level of reinvention, or it's not even reinvention, I guess, but it's just something different other than babyface Matt Cardona that I see in Impact Wrestling that I'm like, this is still Zack Ryder, and I don't want to see Zack Ryder anymore, at least as a babyface. I guess heel Zack Ryder, I would. The MLW thing, I think they were close on something that fell through, is my best guess. Whether it was Vice, there's been rumors that they were talking with another streaming partner, and the other streaming partner had some relationship with WWE that may have gotten in the way. It's, you know, I worry about them. How long can you run the show on YouTube and be in sports? I think they were looking for the right television deal for a reason. And, you know, they trimmed some talent, but not a lot. the idea of the MLW contracts. Like, what kind of contract was Lee Moriarty signed to that he lasted so little and is clearly under contract to AEW? So there's some time where they announce deals, and it seems like they're actual deals where somebody's kind of locked in, like a Jacob Fatu or an Alexander Hammerstone. And then there's the other deals where it's like, are they really locked into anything?
Right.
You know, what's the deal in some of those contracts? And I'm just not sure. And then I thought there was one other thing I wanted to touch on. Yeah, I mean, just the NWA, I understand why they took the money from Fight TV. I think they made a mistake in not having some type of YouTube presence to actually drive people to Fight TV, to their weekly power show. And now they are going to start up this NWA USA. I fear it's kind of too little too late, but we'll see. And I also have a feeling that's being done as a prelude to them probably not being paid by Fight TV anymore. Maybe I'm wrong. It's hard to believe that was a real moneymaker for Fight, where they would get a return on that investment. And so I just wonder if we're approaching the year, the 1 year mark of them being on Fight TV. And I wonder if that's kind of the end of them having a weekly show on Fight. Not that they won't continue to have pay-per-views and things, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if they become a YouTube company again. And if they do that, can they survive? You know, it's like you hope for the best for everybody, but there's some question marks with some of these smaller promotions, certainly as we've seen with Ring of Honor.
Yeah, this is, to me, another big story for the year ahead is these promotions that we just kind of take for granted that they exist. Are they going to exist at the end of the year? If you'd asked me at the beginning of the year if Ring of Honor was going to end the year as a company, I would say, and you know, just as they normally were, I would say yes. But, I mean, they had a long run in the obviously in the game for, you know, I don't know how many decades or a couple decades, I think, something like that. And they're going in a creative hiatus, a company hiatus, releasing everyone from contract to kind of figure out what their future is. If I'm these other groups like NWA, MLW, you know, I kind of like, am I making money and am I making enough to really keep this going? If so, what for? There's this, you know, so much thought about, Is wrestling hot? Is wrestling hot? I don't think it's hot. I think that it's hot for certain elements are when it comes to there's interest when AEW signs someone new or WWE makes news or someone so forth, and people are watching pretty consistently. But obviously, you know, it's nothing like the Attitude Era. It's hot for like, I don't think it's hot. I think it hasn't really trickled down the indies. I've talked to promoters that are still coming out of the pandemic, so to speak, you know, with being able to put on shows. Some are finally kind of getting back into it. Some never got back into it. I think it's such a niche business that you have to try to like find these hardcores, but are the hardcores enough to sustain it? And yeah, unless you're going to, these networks, to me, there's so many networks that need content, even, you know, smaller cable networks that are looking for something. To me, if wrestling was really hot, they would have, MLW would be already signed, like no question. NWA would, you know, they'd be looking for these wrestling promotions to put on there. And even like GCW, I think GCW arguably is the promotion of the year in a lot of ways for what they've been able to do. They have no TV product, you know, they have just word of mouth and they make interesting signings and interesting cards. They seemingly have like two cards a weekend, which is a lot to keep up with. But, you know, they don't have a TV deal and they seem to be doing on the surface just fine. But
can they expand?
Yeah.
Without changing.
Do they want to stay? Are they like, look, we've made, you know, and this would be for, you know, something like, you know, Brett Lauderdale or something like this to answer, but you know, they could be a point of like, look, we're doing well. We're going to keep doing what we do and just see, you know, see what the future holds. But if Ring of Honor is questioning their future coming back and when they come back, you know, what, there's so much wrestling on TV. What's going to make it different, you know? And I think that's the big question in 2022 is fans have to deal with. Not only is their wrestling cup overfilling, which it has been, I think, for a couple of years, but there's all these other factors that come in of like, I want to watch this. I want to do this. I want to do X. And at some point, there's just too much for people like, I have to start cutting some of this out. And if you have too many people cut the stuff out, you know, your company starts losing money and then you're like, what are we doing this for? So that was just kind of a mini rant of just something I'm just thinking ahead for the year ahead and how things end up.
Well, and you didn't even touch on Impact. I mean, let's face it, every year they survive. It's like, really? We don't know how they make money.
Yeah, I think I'm less concerned about them because Access bought them, you know, for that.
Yeah.
But still, again, it's like, how do they, these companies that don't tour at all, the touring is obviously, that's a pretty big component because you're getting out there to different markets, you're getting different fan bases and different groups. You're not running some of the same groups all the time, but I don't think any of these groups are going to start touring by any means. I don't see Impact announcing they're going to go out every month on the road because they're going to keep costs down being in Nashville, but you're also running in front of the same group. Obviously they're doing kind of the Nashville and Vegas thing. Maybe they add a third city, but you know, it's kind of like the UFC, what the UFC is doing with their fight night events, just staying in Las Vegas. They have everything they need there, and they're saving money by doing it. They have the infrastructure. They know the system, the deal, all the stuff. They don't have to worry about travel other than just bringing people in. But no production trucks, anything like that. I think I'm fascinated to kind of see where things go. I'd love to be more optimistic about it, but I'm just, you know, I kind of just look back at this last year and the past 2 years and kind of how the pandemic has really just changed everything when it comes to throughout production in pro sports and TV and all these things that, you know, at some point, like rubber hits the road and these companies aren't making money. It's what are you doing this for? You know?
Well, and with Impact and Access, it's or Anthem, I guess it reminds me of Ring of Honor and Sinclair. You know, Ring of Honor was on solid ground. I think they had a $12 or $13 million budget every year. And then when problems started to happen with, you know, outside, not that ROH was, I can't imagine they were getting a return on that investment financially. You know, they'll take the programming and whatnot, and that's why they were fine for years. But once Sinclair itself started having issues, I think it made Ring of Honor expendable to them. Now, I think Impact means more to Anthem than Ring of Honor does to Sinclair. They bought that before they bought Access. People joke that they bought Access just to give Impact a home. But clearly, you know, they're invested in that. But if there's issues with Anthem as a whole that don't even pertain to Impact, that's when you got to worry about a Ring of Honor type situation that suddenly maybe Impact is something that they look to trim from their budget. But yeah, I mean, I'm just amazed. It's nothing against Impact. I think they offer a good product, but they're on Access TV. It's not available in a ton of households, and they just have a smaller audience, and they keep adding, you know, I don't know what their budget is, but they're not afraid to make competitive offers. Few seem to take it, but I mean, they're making competitive offers to people. Where does that money come from? And does it ever run out? For their sake, I hope not, but you just never know.
Right. Well, Jason, you've been more than generous with your time. We're coming up here on the hour. Before I let you go, obviously give you a chance to plug where people can read you, hear you, feel the Jason Powell experience. The floor is yours.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. The Pro Wrestling Boom podcast is my free weekly podcast, and lately it's been very ROH-centric. I've had Ian Riccaboni on the show, for instance, Shane Taylor, and most recently Josh Woods, the day after his AEW Dark premiere aired. So that is available, again, for free. Just do a search for Pro Wrestling Boom wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts or wherever. And the website is prowrestling.net. You need a news fix, hit list, live coverage of all the major television shows and pay-per-views, we're there. And when I say live coverage, it's not just the Who Beat Who. We do give live analysis on everything. If we're doing a live review, you can count on our instant feedback on things. And if you want to take the experience a step further, pwmembership.net is the place to go. Ad-free access to the website, ad-free access to our podcasts, and there are a ton of them that are exclusive for the members. All the major television shows and pay-per-view events reviewed in audio form, and also the .NET Weekly Audio Show, which is our flagship. Jake Barnett and I host that on Fridays now, discussing all the news of the week, and also my Monday Q&A audio show, which is a lot of fun, with wrestling questions to start, and then God knows what they're going to ask me in the non-wrestling section on the back end of that podcast. But again, it's pwmembership.net if you're interested, and feel free to follow me on Twitter, at ProWrestlingNet.
Well, great plug. And, you know, we get to know each other through this pandemic, and hopefully we get to keep knowing each other once this pandemic is actually done. Yeah, it's just a weird thing, but I think we'll get through it. And yeah, we'll hopefully talk a year from now about all the crazy things that happened in 2022. Jason Powell, once again, thanks so much.
Thank you, Josh. It's always a pleasure.
Okay. Big thanks to Jason Powell for stopping by. That was a lot of fun. And looking forward to having him on at some point next year to chat about news and all the happenings. And hopefully I didn't bum you guys out too much with, you know, talks of potentially all these organizations going away. But I think it's real, and something you've heard me talk about if you're a regular listener. I've talked about a lot is there is, I don't want to say a reckoning, but maybe there is. At some point, there's too much of pro wrestling on TV and available. And I realize that people are like, well, I watch it. Well, really, the eye has to be like multiplied by so many people in order for these companies to make money. And ultimately, that's what this is all about. Any business, has to make money. And I don't know if some of these smaller groups are. They're still going, so I'd assume they are. And, you know, wages, I assume, are probably down for some of these groups, kind of a doing what they can type thing, giving a lot of wrestlers opportunities. And we don't want to see them go away, but there is there's a reality that, look, ROH couldn't figure it out. And they say they're going to come back in April. I have my doubts. And the way that so many people are talking, and you've heard Dave and Brian talk about it and others, is that we don't know if they're going to come back. They say they are, but if they do, what makes them any different than a GCW or an MLW or something like that? Essentially, it's what's going to make you stand out. And I don't really know what that answer is, to be honest. And I think we're going to find that out. What makes the NWA different from anything else? It's still wrestling. And if you're like, look, I have, 2 hours. I mean, there's a certain amount of time that a casual fan, or even a little bit more than casual fan, invested wrestling fan, has to watch in a given week. And with WWE, there's a minimum of 5 hours. With AEW, there's a minimum of 3 hours if you're not counting YouTube stuff or WWE main event or anything like that. And if you're watching other stuff, if watching indies, and it's hard, man. It's hard. And I think the correction is coming in 2022. And unfortunately, I don't know. Like I said, I think if wrestling was hot, that a lot of these groups would be signed to TV deals at this point. Some of these groups may survive, but I think they're going to be surviving in a much different stratosphere and a much different reality than they are now. And that's a shoot, brother. And we'll see what happens with that, but it'll be fascinating to watch as always. So, so we have, half the year is in the books. Half the year is in the books for the MMA side of things. Half the year is in the books for the pro wrestling side of things. We have 6 months to go. We have 6 podcasts for pro wrestling. We have 2 more for MMA, so 8 more to go. And the series has been fun. It is draining because there's a lot of research to do, but it's a lot of fun too. And that's what we're doing. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Please let me know. You can email me, joshwrestlingobserver.com. Maybe I forgot some stuff. You can always hit me up on Twitter, joshnason. You know, tell Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer to publicize these shows. Huh? I haven't said anything about it. Help me out a little bit, guys. Come on, help me. So until next time, which will be July, we'll be talking about with a very special guest. I won't tell you who it is. It's a past guest, someone that's not been on for years. I'll tell you that much. And I want to confirm this person's actually going to be on the show before telling you their name, but it is a very popular person. I'll put it that way. So until next time, thank you very much, and insert catchphrase here.